From the Land Grant University at Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Mark Report. It's the 10th day of March 2009. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with John Hester of L&M Commodities. He's in Newmarket, Indiana. And Stephen Platt of Archer Financial Services will join us to take up the energy markets. And later in the program, we'll hear from University of Illinois Farm Management Specialist Gary Schnittke. Farmers, of course, are busy making crop insurance decisions this week. We'll have Gary's take on the programs and how producers will want to evaluate them. And then, in 26 minutes, Don Day, meteorologist, will join us to take a look at the agricultural weather forecast. So stay with us for this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report. The Closing Market Report is a production of WILL. It's public radio from the University of Illinois.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at AgriGold.com or at 800-262-7333.
In Chicago, on this Monday afternoon, futures finished the day like this. March wheat futures at 522 3/4, up 9 3/4 on their settlement. May contract at 532 3/4, 9.5 cents higher. In July contract, 544 3/4, up 9.5. September contract, 9.5 cents higher for the wheat. In the soft red at 569 1/4. March contract for the hard red at 580 1/4 in Kansas City, 10.5 cents higher. Back in Chicago, the corn trade finished the March contract 9.5 cents higher at 366 3/4. May at 375 1/2, up a dime. July 385 1/2, up 10 1/4. And September corn, 394 1/2, up 10 1/2 cents. December futures at 406 3/4, up 10 3/4. March soybean futures, $8.89, 8 higher. May futures, 877, up 12. July, 876 3/4, 13 3/4 higher. And the August contract at 844 1/2, up 16 on the day. November beans at 835 1/2, 18 cents higher. March bean meal futures, 280.80, up $5.80. May, 271.30, up 6.30. March bean oil futures, 30.72, 21 higher. The May contract at 30.98, up 22. Live cattle futures finished the April at 82.87 1/2. On the livestock side of the CME group, down 32 1/2 cents. June live cattle, 32 1/2 lower as well, 81.25. March feeders at 90.55, 17 1/2 lower. The April futures down 17 1/2 at 90.75. And April lean hog futures at 60.52 1/2, $1.90 lower. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. April crude oil futures at 46.24, 83 cents lower. May contract at $1.06 loss at $47 even for the crude oil. Ethanol trading at $1.54 and 9 cents, up 2 4 cents for the day. And the May at $1.55 3/10, 2 6/10 higher. April natural gas, 3.82 4/10, 4 1/10 lower. RBOB gasoline at $1.30 2/10, 3 2/10 lower. April heating oil at $1.19, down 1 6/10. And the propane futures at 61 9/10 cents, just about unchanged on the day. Gold futures are trading at $895.60 an ounce now, down $22.10. And the Dow has gained 277 points. And currently stands just about 68.23. U.S. dollar at 88.92. That's down 0.23. And the CRB index at 207.72 is down 0.69 on the afternoon. Here's what the weather forecast says. A flood warning is in effect for northeastern and east central Illinois and northwestern Indiana until tomorrow afternoon. A flash flood watch is in effect for much of northern third of Indiana through late tonight. Wind advisories have been issued for much of northern Illinois from this evening until tomorrow morning, and for northern Indiana from midnight tonight until tomorrow afternoon. Wind advisories, of course, will stay in effect through tomorrow afternoon. This afternoon, though, skies are cloudy, scattered showers, a few thunderstorms, severe thunderstorms, heavy, with rainfall possible. Highs ranging from 50 in the far northwestern parts of Illinois to 78 in southern Indiana. And tonight in northwestern Illinois, it'll become partly cloudy with a chance for a few snow flurries. In northeastern and central Illinois, cloudy showers and thunderstorms this evening. And then partial clearing overnight elsewhere. Cloudy showers and thunderstorms. You're listening to the CMR from AM 580.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
You're listening to the Closing Mark Report. It's a Tuesday afternoon. Time to check in on the agricultural futures markets. John Hester of L&M Commodities in Newmarket, Indiana, joins us. Good afternoon to you, gentlemen.
Hi, Todd. How are you getting along?
Well, I'm doing very well this afternoon. Tell me about the marketplace as you see it.
Okay. Well, as we all know, this morning the EPA came out and they're pushing for a 12 to 13% blend in the ethanol. That gave the corn a huge boost on the opening, along with the wheat. The wheat and the corn are kind of running hand in hand right now. And, you know, we had our corn get up 15, 16 cents right after the opening, and that created a short covering frenzy in the beans, and beans were up 25 to 30 at one time, depending on the month. And, pardon me, and when that was going on, crude oil was higher and the dollar was a lot lower. And then gradually during the day, the crude oil started selling off and the dollar started to rally a little bit. And, you know, towards the end of the day, the dollar got, or the crude oil got down a buck and a half, and the dollar was about steady. And that put a little pressure on the grain markets, and they took profit in the beans, and the beans closed 12 to 13 cents higher. And the corn stayed very strong because of the ethanol idea, that, and it stayed up 9, 10, 11 cents. And, you know, during all this, the stock market has stayed very strong. I've got it up roughly 300 points right now. And, you know, I think it was a very good close in the corn and the wheat. The beans, I think, were a follower today. And, you know, when the micro market sold off, more pressure was on the beans than it was on the corn and the wheat.
That's interesting, because as I was looking at the harvest month for soybean, November actually posted an outside up day. That may be one of the few good technical signs that we've had in the marketplace for a long time. And if corn and wheat were the leaders in the process, soybeans were the followers, I think it could bode well for maybe the next couple of days at least for the marketplace. Would you think that there might be some follow-through, or is it just...
Yeah, I think there's a good possibility. And, you know, with this ethanol mandate or the question about it right now, my guess would be that corn would probably be the leader, and we did close above overhead resistance in the corn today, so that's a good sign that, you know, we're above it, and we can maybe set up some new parameters in the next couple days. And the beans closing up there, I believe there's a gap in the November beans. I believe it's around 860, 865 that we need to close in that. And if we can close that gap, then we might be, you know, set ourselves up for another 50 cents on top of that, or maybe even a little more. But, yes, I think in the corn it was an excellent close. The beans was a very good close. And, you know, we're above support, and, you know, like I say, that sets up a new set of parameters for the next couple trading days.
This morning, as we were listening to the guest at the All Day Ag Outlook meeting, which still continues, by the way, this afternoon at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana, and Wayne Nelson, who we normally talk to, is there, and was on our bean panel this morning. But as we talked to some of the analysts this morning, they were of the opinion, this, of course, was the cash grain analysts, so not the futures analysts, but the cash grain guys, that locking in the overage at this point on the corn might be a good idea on the basis, and then waiting for a little pop in the marketplace to come as we move through the spring. Have you guys discussed that there, and what do you think of the idea?
Yeah, I think we've talked briefly about it, and in fact, we recommended to a couple guys yesterday. The basis was pretty tight here, and we kind of suspected the basis might widen a little bit, and we had them lock in some March and April basis and make some basis contracts. And, you know, we did that with the anticipation that maybe the market could rally 20, 30 cents. I think it's a very good idea. Beans, the basis is still pretty wide, but, you know, the problem is if corn takes off and gets a lot higher, the higher corn and beans go, the basis will probably get wider.
Right. Anything else to add before I let you go for the day?
Oh, it looks like that gold's trying to rally a little bit right now. It's only down $18 after being down about 25 or 26 at one point today. So it doesn't look like it's lost its luster yet. So and have a good day.
Hey, you too, John. Thanks much.
All right. Bye.
John Hester is with L&M Commodities out of Newmarket, Indiana. Joined us here on the Closing Mark Report on a Tuesday afternoon.
Agricultural information is made possible with support from ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
Well, our thanks, by the way, to those who are at the All-Day Ag Outlook meeting. I suspect they're listening in one form or another to this program after the fact, either on our website or on our telephone line. That number is 217-333-3434. We post a portion of the opening and closing Mark Report futures and some of the numbers there at 10:30 a.m. Central and 3:15 p.m. daily every business day. And of course, you can always pick up our programming off of willag.org. That's willag.org. The All Day Ag Outlook meeting, of course, continues in Covington, Indiana at this hour. Dave Dickey at the helm there. I'm Todd Gleason at the helm here at the Closing Mark Report. 399 in the seats over at the Beef House. Our thanks to all of those folks and especially to the sponsors of that program and all of the analysts who made it in. Now, if you didn't get the opportunity to listen to that program because you were there, were listening live to this one, and you weren't there, then don't worry. We'll put it up on our website, and we'll put it in a podcast, too, probably the Commodity Week podcast. Sign up for that one at willag.org, and we'll drop in all of the programming that happened at the Beef House on this 10th day of March. In just 2 minutes, in just a moment, we'll hear from Gary Schnitke about what's been happening in the world of crop insurance.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Stuart Peterson. For over 20 years, Stuart Peterson has helped farmers manage both marketing opportunities and risks through their analysis, advice, and action. Stuart Peterson, confidence like never before. More information is available at www.stuart-peterson.com.
Let's start out, Gary, with this question. What were the final figures from USDA for the federal crop insurance programs, corn and soybean?
Corn and soybean prices, base prices for 2009 are $4.04 for corn and $8.80 for soybeans.
And what does that mean?
Actually, that is used to set our revenue guarantees on the revenue products, all revenue products, CRC, RA, and GRIP. This year, those prices are considerably below last year, so to get the same dollar coverage levels will have to rise this year from last year to have the same dollar coverage per acre.
So instead of 65, they'd need to go to 70 or 75 or 80 or 85 right. or whatever percent coverage they would like in order to get the same dollar coverage they had last year. The good news is that we've known for quite some time that it was probably going to be cheaper to do that.
Yeah, and it is going to be. The premiums are going to be less expensive. One reason why is because the base prices are lower, and that influences premiums. The other thing that's happening this year that's pretty significant is that they're increasing the subsidy levels on enterprise units, which applies to CRC and RA. And an enterprise unit is all of one crop in a county. And that means that if a person decides to insure all of one crop in a county, not divide up their farms so that they could get insurance payments on each farm, but all of one crop in one county, they increase those subsidy levels substantially, and that will result in $8 to $9 less premiums this year than last year.
And I think that the good news there is that you're likely to tell folks that they need to take one of those particular policies as opposed to the GRIP policies this year. Is that right?
Well, no, GRIP is still a good policy. I think the choice comes down between GRIP and CRC and RA, and particularly at the enterprise level. And GRIP is going to tend to pay out more than it pays in over time, and there's nothing that's changed that. And CRC and RA provide better risk protection because it's based on an own farm's yield. I would suggest that farmers who haven't in the past look at CRC at an enterprise level, and what they'll find is that their premiums will be for a 75% coverage level, something in the $8 to $9 an acre range, which will be considerably less than last year, and maybe increase the coverage level so that one of the big things I guess we're concerned about this year is lower prices, and that will provide more protection if you increase the coverage level. But this year might not be a bad year to keep with that GRIP program. We're starting the year with a 880 soybean price, but we're already seeing futures contracts a dollar below that. So there's a considerable chance of low prices and pretty high yield, high payments on GRIP products when they're purchased at a 90% coverage level.
Are there a couple of key issues that producers can look at in order to help them make the decision as to whether they're doing CRC or GRIP, and what might they be?
The big thing is people with CRC will likely feel they need that individual coverage because they're in a more of a financially vulnerable situation. The other thing that pushes people to CRC is if they have land that doesn't match the county. And I'll just give you an example here. Let's say you have 1,000 acres, but it's spread in 6 sections over the whole county. You're going to match the county yield pretty closely. You might not match the county yield if all of it's in one or two sections located to next to another. And if those sections are in poorer land, then you're not in as good a position to use GRIP as CRC.
Ag economists across the Midwest, I see, have been suggesting that the new ACRE program rather than the traditional farm programs might be a good way for producers to start out this year. Of course, once they've signed up, they've got to be in. Are there crop insurance decisions that they need to make that go along with the ACRE program? Should they decide that they're going to put a unit or all their units into the ACRE program?
I don't see as much if linkage between what the crop insurance decision and whether you stick in the traditional or ACRE program, because either one of those programs aren't going to provide that good of risk protection for an individual farm. If you're going to be an ACRE, the one thing that you have to consider is that there's a farm trigger in it that must be met before you can receive ACRE payments, and the farm trigger increases the higher your farm level premium or what you pay for crop insurance. So if you're going to be an ACRE, chances of getting a payment are probably larger if you have a higher crop insurance premium.
So that may be one thing they need to consider if they go into the ACRE program. Two things, I guess. They probably need to take crop insurance to not double protect themselves, but to protect themselves, and they need to take it at a higher coverage level.
Yeah, and again, if you're in ACRE, you're not going to be providing yourself protection for yield shortfalls on your own farm, so you still need crop insurance. And yet, the higher your crop insurance premium, the more likely you are to meet that farm level trigger. And just to give you a feel for that, we did a little analysis with FPFM yields, and across the state, if they didn't have any insurance payment, they met the trigger 85% of the time. If they had $20 premium, they met it 90% of the time. So it increased it from 85% to 90%.
Tell me about the FarmDoc website and how producers can use the comparison tools and premium calculators that are there for crop insurance between now and the time they have to make the decision very shortly.
There is a premium calculator on there that will allow them to calculate premiums for their individual areas. There's also a historical evaluation tool there that allows you to compare how the products are projected to pay out over time. Then we also have on there a fast spreadsheet that you can download, and that will also give you premiums, and there's more options that you can get premiums on the spreadsheet tool. That spreadsheet tool also includes a what-if, so you can look at different price and yield scenarios. And it also contains a historical evaluation tool, which allows you to look and see how the products have paid out over time.
And the spreadsheet and the premium calculator, which are two different things, are available to everyone and good across the Corn Belt?
Across the Corn Belt. And they're available in the crop insurance section of FarmDoc. So go FarmDoc, and FarmDoc.uiuc.edu, and that's in the crop insurance section.
And you're picking your crop inserting your APH and I think your county and state, right, of course, right?
That's right. State crop, state, county crop, and APH.
Okay. Thanks much, Gary.
Thank you.
Gary Schnitke is an ag economist from the University of Illinois, farm management specialist, joining us here on the Closing Market Report. I'm Todd Gleason.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
It's Tuesday afternoon, time to take our weekly look at the agricultural energy market. Stephen Platt of Archer Financial Services, that's an ADM affiliate based in Chicago, Illinois, joins us by phone this afternoon. Hi, Steve. How are you?
Very fine, Todd.
Well, and we had Perry Dixon from ADM on at our All Day Ag Outlook meeting over at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana this morning. He did a great job of laying out ADM's view of the marketplace. And if you'd like to listen to that again, you could do that off our website at willag.org. Be posted there on Thursday or Friday of this week, and we'll try to put it in the Commodity Week podcast as well for those who are signed up for that. But right now, we want to talk about the Dow Jones Industrial Averages and crude oil futures with you, Steve. Tell me how you viewed that marketplace today.
Well, we finally got some good news out of Citi. They indicated they had made profit here on some of their operations here the past couple months, which was really the first good news we really got from the banking sector. The crude market really did not respond. It responded initially, but we subsequently did see it pull back rather quickly in response to some of the demand forecasts out of the EIA. They indicated that we're going to probably see another, or did revise downward their forecast for demand for the current year, which is not all that surprising, Don.
Well, EIA stands for, I believe, Energy Information Agency.
Correct. That's the statistical arm of the U.S. government.
That's correct. And so those numbers were lower. How much lower?
By 430,000 barrels to 84.27 on a global basis. We'll be getting some other numbers coming out of the International Energy Agency here on Friday, and those numbers we'll have to watch. But, you know, we're finally, I think, catching up in terms of the demand decline that we've seen, and that's probably somewhat supportive for the market if we stop seeing some of these sharp revisions that we've had over the past couple months.
It seems to me that the marketplace is awfully calm for the new bottoms that have been put in. Is that a part and parcel of getting some numbers, and they would have been expected numbers maybe, or not expected numbers from Citigroup that were better, but the idea that the marketplace is starting to heal at some point?
Well, you've seen some pretty sharp declines in production levels, and I think that's helping out the market in general, and also probably starting to balance out maybe with the demand side. And that's what we need. We need those adjustments to take place, not only in the energy side, but also other areas of the economy.
Any final word from you before I let you go?
I have to really think we're seeing some pretty good basing action in the energy complex. I think people might look to do some forward coverage.
Thank you very much, Steve.
Have a good day.
You too. Steve Platt is with Archer Financial Services. It's an ADM affiliate out of Chicago, Illinois. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report on a Tuesday afternoon. We'll be back in 2 minutes when we'll talk with Don Day of Day Weather.
It's National Blueberry Popover Day. Food historians are in agreement. Popovers are an American recipe derived from Yorkshire pudding from 17th century England. The oldest known reference to popovers is in 1850, and the first cookbook to print a popover recipe was Practical Cooking by M.N. Henderson, published in 1876. Popovers were originally made by cooking the batter in custard cups, lubricated with drippings from roast beef or pork. On this day in agricultural history in 1845, John Chapman died. He was better known as Johnny Appleseed. An American pioneer, he planted apple seeds in the Ohio River Valley area of Ohio, Illinois, and Indiana. Appleseed planted nurseries rather than orchards, and he built fences around them to protect them from livestock. He obtained apple seeds for free from cider mills, and he went barefoot year-round. In 1867, Lillian D. Wald was born. She was a scientist and nurse, and among her activities, she helped initiate the enactment of pure food laws in the U.S. Wald also took on major industries, lobbying for health inspections of the workplace in order to protect workers. And in 1873, John Torrey died. He was the first professional botanist in the New World. A mountain peak in Colorado is named for him, and Torrey climbed the mountain for the first time when he was 76 years old, where he gathered alpine plants that he had named 50 years earlier. And that's this day in agricultural history.
You're listening to the Closing Mark Report. It's a Tuesday afternoon. Time to check the agricultural weather forecast. Don Day of Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming joins us. Good afternoon to you, Don.
Hey, good afternoon, Todd.
It is wet here, and it was really wet when we went over to the beef house this morning for our all-day Ag Outlook meeting. That was in Covington, Indiana, right there on the Illinois-Indiana border. I suspect there may be more rainfall yet to come.
Yeah, we certainly are looking at a wet weather pattern, Todd. We've got ourselves what I would call a pretty typical March weather pattern, where the storminess is pretty active across the country, coast to coast. The only areas that have been missing out are the southern plains, although we'll talk about in a minute their chances for moisture get a little bit better. But the system that is moving through, he is a pretty quick mover, and we will see many areas clear out tonight and tomorrow. But I have to warn folks in the Midwest, be ready for some colder weather. Temperatures behind this front are pretty chilly. They set record lows across portions of Montana and even western North Dakota last night. When you set records in the Dakotas and Montana this time of year, that's cold.
Well, how cold was it?
Well, we had areas that were 18 to 20 degrees below zero.
Oh, you were supposed to have a joke there, dude. Well, that sounds cold. Well, and I'm sorry. Just popped into my mind.
It was so cold. How cold was it? I should have picked that cue up.
Yeah, that's okay. That's all right. How cold will it be here is the next question, I suppose.
Well, we'll have no problem looking at overnight low temperatures. That'll be dropping on down into the teens in many areas. In some areas of the northern plains, we'll see high temperatures struggling to get out of the 20s. So it's going to be a pretty cold weather pattern with some hard freezing temperatures.
You suggested we were going to talk about the hard red winter wheat in the Great Plains area. Tell me about it.
Well, there is a little bit of hope. The patterns are changing enough where we're starting to see some southern stream energy, and this is something we tend to see as we start towards that spring season where moisture starts to come up from the lower latitudes of Central America, even some Gulf of Mexico moisture. This is showing us signs that many areas of Texas, portions of Kansas and Oklahoma may actually have, over the next week or two, some decent chances for moisture. Now, the areas that will be most favored will be the eastern side of Texas, the eastern side of Kansas and Oklahoma, but some of those very dry western areas as well.
Well, that'll be very good for them. How far behind are they?
Well, they're way behind. In fact, there's been one good rain in that part of the country, and it was about a three-quarter inch rain, and that happened in January. This rain coming is the first measurable rain since then.
And if you take a look around the world at the rest of the wheat growing areas, how do they fare?
Well, if we were to go over to Eastern Asia, take a look at what's going on over in China, they've seen a weather pattern that's been picking up a little bit in terms of weather that has gotten a little bit more wet. And their March has started a little bit more moist, especially lately, and that's the way it's looking as well. Over in Europe, they've had a stormy March so far. Precipitation has been pretty good in the Ukraine and most of eastern and western Europe.
Don, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Don Day is with Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming, joins us here on the Closing Mark Report each and every Tuesday afternoon. Be sure to visit our website. The address is willag.org. There you can sign up for our weekend newsletter, listen to this program, other ag programming, sign up for our podcast, and probably pick up, though I'm not sure it's there, our number if you want to, for our telephone system. It's 217-333-3434. Have a great afternoon. I'm Todd Gleason.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at AgriGold.com or at 800-262-7333.